Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today. Unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. In a few minutes, we're going to take some questions. But first, I want you to think back to any old-time TV show or any old-time novel that you've read in which there's a baby about to be born. And think what happens in those old-time stories. What do? They send the men out to get boiling water, to boil the water. Which makes sense. You need boiling water to sterilize clothes, and it's good to create hot compresses, etc. But do you really need 25 strong men to boil one kettle of water? Obviously not. I mean, clearly it's a ploy to just get the men out of the room, where the concern is that they would be underfoot and panic and not really know what to do. Something similar I see often happening in the libertarian movement, which is this. Because so many of us tend to be so perfectionistic, so logical, it's easy to get us out of the room. All you have to do is create some minor, technically wrong thing. You create that minor, technically wrong thing, what happens? We all get out of the room because we're debating that technically wrong thing, but we're letting the big things keep on going. In the example of a birth, that's no big deal because the thing that keeps on going is a baby's being born. That's a beautiful and wonderful thing. But when we get out of the room, it's just a monster being born, and that's not a beautiful thing or a wonderful thing. That's something we need to stop. What are some of these minor things that they get us out of the room with? Minor things, hemp, minor restrictions on open containers. And I'm not saying that I think that you should not be allowed to have an open container of alcohol. I mean, I think it's libertarianly obvious. It's just common sense. There's no reason for a law like that. But it's smaller than some of the bigger issues. And so how do we keep ourselves from getting led astray on this? Number one, we need to embrace this one idea. This is the most important idea in all of politics, which is you cannot separate politics and culture. If you're having a political battle, you should be having a culture war at the same time. If you're not having a culture war, you're just being tossed out of the room to debate some minor non-issue. The Libertarian Party can be an organization that just does drink-ins and smoke-ins, that just does hemp and alcohol, and just focuses on the smallest things that they can possibly find. That is one version. And in that case, honestly, Libertarian Party is not going to be super opposed, just lovable, harmless eccentrics. Old Uncle Libertarian is here to be extra fair-minded about the minorest of issues. It's not going to offend anybody. It's not going to bother anybody. If you want them out of the room, just find some really minor, minor, minor thing that's libertarianly wrong, and you can keep on going with your statism. That's one version. But there is another version of the Libertarian Party. And that version is the Libertarian Party is a spearhead of the larger libertarian movement. And what do you do with a spear? Well, you can use a spear to sharpen a pencil if you want to. But you can also use a spear to drive right into the heart of the enemy, and that's what we need to be doing. People say, it's scary to go up against the big things. Of course it is. That's why God gave us courage, or why nature gave us courage, or why our logical decision-making gave us courage. Wherever it came from, that's what courage is for. It's for this. This is what it's for. You know how people talk about courage? Courage is not something that you use to do stupid things on behalf of the government. Courage is what you use to fight things that are popular because it's scary to fight things that are popular. Believe me, I know better than anyone, it can be scary to fight things that are popular. But that doesn't make it less necessary. That makes it more necessary. Think of this. 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, marital rape was considered impossible. If a husband raped his wife, it's just that's just normal. That's just what you're allowed to do. in many states, and I'm not talking about, you know, some really small state, I'm talking about New York. In New York in the 1980s, a wife could not accuse her husband of rape. It just wasn't possible. The law just said, yeah, that's not rape, that's just fine. And what happened? People fought that. And it was an unpopular fight at first. People said, what are you doing? You're trying to destroy marriage. No, we weren't trying to destroy marriage. People were trying to make humanity a universal thing. That when marriage begins, human decency doesn't end. That's what they were trying to do. Now today, we can be the minor league libertarians all day long, and I know it's easy and it's kind of intellectually fun, right? It's intellectually fun to talk about those things. It's intellectually fun to think about soda taxes and alcohol laws and hemp. And it's fun because you don't get much opposition, right? Because no one knows what you're talking about or no one really cares because they, unlike perhaps you, can see that it's like the smallest, minorest part of government. They understand that government's not supposed to be that's not going to be perfect. So they don't really go with the little nitpicking minor things. They look at the big things. If they look at the big thing, if the statist government growers look at the big things, while we look at the minor things, here's what's going to happen. The big things are going to grow, and the minor things are going to maybe shrink. And what's the end result? A total net gain of government. More government, much more government. You can only really spend so much tax money on banning open containers of alcohol. But you can spend a lot of tax money on schools and military. The biggest waste of money that we have right now are coincidentally the things where the government has put in the most propaganda. Why? Because it makes sense to put in a lot of propaganda when you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars or trillions of dollars. The government's not going to put in a lot of propaganda on open container laws because it's a 15-cent non-issue. So it's easier to fight where there's no propaganda. Of course it's easier to fight where there's no propaganda. That's common sense. But it's also less valuable. That fight isn't that valuable. Not comparatively. The big fights are government, school, and military. Those are the most popular things. They're the most expensive things and the most damaging things. The military, the current federal government's military, does damage on two sides. It damages the foreign countries that we bomb. It damages the American soldiers that are forced to engage in these atrocities. Government schools also have multiple directions of damage. They damage us financially by taking money away from us without our consent. They damage the education of children, not just the academic education. We all know that government schools do education poorly, academic education, that is. But they're also damaging the moral education. They are, at the second that kid walks in the door, he's saying, my parents, whom I look up to, believe that it is good and okay and right to steal to provide childcare. The second that kid walks in through the door, he has gotten an endorsement for big government from his parents. The very existence of government schools teaches bad morality. The second that a kid walks in, he is being morally deformed. And that's a hard fight to have. For the last 40 years, the Libertarian Party has been avoiding arguments and losing elections. The common wisdom that the Libertarian Party has been winning arguments is false. The Libertarian Party has not been winning arguments. They've been picking arguments that are so minor that no one else can understand them and, quote, winning those non-arguments. So we've won a lot of arguments about soda taxes. We've won a lot of arguments about drinking. We've won a lot of arguments about hemp. We've won some arguments about the Fed where the other side just concedes. Why? Because they don't know what the Fed is. We're going to talk about the Fed later on today. I'm not saying it's not important, but most people don't know what it is. But when it comes to military and government schools, we haven't won those arguments because we simply haven't had those arguments. We have been chickening out of those arguments. We've been saying, well, it's not pragmatic or something like that. Well, that's just false. Some of the biggest gains in the liberty movement have been in schooling, by getting people to believe that government schools are evil. Why? Because they've opted out then. Today, because of homeschooling and private schooling, about 10% of kids no longer go to government schools. 10% no longer. What if that's 15 or 20 or 50 or 100%? At that point, government schools are gone. That's real incrementalism, right? That's what actual incrementalism is. Incrementally, people are leaving. They're not getting addicted to government-funded charter schools or government-funded vouchers. They're joining the free market. No intermediate step needed. They see that government schools are bad. They see that they love their kids. And they say, let me do something else. That's the thing. That's progress. That's a victory. Talking about 7 million kids. About. That's saving Americans about $70 billion a year in taxes. I don't know of any soda tax in the world that is that's about $70 billion. I don't know any open container laws that are in the neighborhood of $70 billion a year to enforce. That's what we're doing. That's progress. When you change people's minds about the actual thing that they hold dear, yeah, it's harder, but it also does something. It's meaningful. A lot of people will say, listen, if you take really hardline stances, if you tell the truth about the military, about government schools, you're not going to have social or political influence. When they tell you that, they're lying to you. All they're saying is they don't want you to have social or political influence. Why? Because they probably are in the military, or they probably are in government schools, and they don't want to be they have cognitive dissonance about it, and they don't want to change. Nobody likes to be confronted with cognitive dissonance. If you're doing something that you think is kind of weird or kind of wrong, you don't want to talk about it. No one does. When they say you're not going to have influence, they're lying to you. You want to not have influence? Debate soda taxes all day. That's how to not have influence. You want no one to listen to you? Talk about soda taxes. Talk more about drinking. Talk more about hemp. That's how to make sure no one's going to listen to you and no one's going to take you seriously. You want to be taken seriously? Talk about the serious issues. And right now in America, the serious issues are government schools and the federal government's military. Those are the big issues. Those are the sacred cows. That's where you need to put your focus. We're going to be right back. Right now you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. Learn more about the Libertarian Party at lp.org. Right now, I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Have you found the beauty inside of you? Join Bonnie Bonadeo each week for Beauty Inside and Out. We'll explain how beauty plays a part in everybody's lives. Our guests are makeup artists, hairdressers, and doctors. But we'll also feature holistic and wellness specialists and spiritual advisors. You can find that beauty inside and express it to its fullest on the outside. Tune in to Beauty Inside and Out every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
What's your coffee story? The one that defines who you truly are in a relaxing setting. It's where you share your memories, plan for the future, and talk about the now. My Favorite Coffee Story is here with host Aniko Somoji. We invite you to listen in and share your coffee stories too. Bring your friends or just stop by as we talk about coffee and the inspiring stories that touch our lives every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. There's a lot of folks that want to defang you. They want to defang you. They want to make you irrelevant. They want to make you weak. Why? Because they like things the way they are. They want to be fashionably libertarian, but they're afraid of actual libertarianism. They don't want to have to defend actual libertarianism. They don't even want actual libertarianism. They want to keep on having the big government programs that they're used to. They want to keep on having government schools. They want to keep on having the military welfare complex operational. They want to keep having big government contracts coming their way. That's what they want. They just think it's kind of cool to be libertarian. That's fine. I mean, people want to join. I mean, when I first joined the Libertarian Party, I wasn't really a libertarian. I was just kind of a centrist that just didn't like either of the other two parties. That was basically it. And as I learned more about libertarianism, and more importantly, as I learned more about politics, I became a true libertarian. So I'm not saying that those people shouldn't be there. They should be there. But they just shouldn't be defanging you. Here's what they're going to tell you. They're going to tell you that in order to change culture, you need to be obsequiously, meekly, invisibly, hyper-polite so that no one knows what you're saying or notices when you speak. And they're going to say that is the only way to convince people. That's the only way to get your message across. And then if you try to disagree, if you point to recent examples like Donald Trump clearly having a major influence despite being the least polite person in history, they're going to say, well, that's different. So fine, let's forget modern day politics. Let's go back. Let's go back in time when people were a little bit more polite on average than today. Let's go back in time to when people have spoken in a very genteel fashion. People didn't swear all the time. People didn't have Twitter to rant and rave on. People thought deeply, and they spoke much with more complex grammar. Let's go back in time. Let's see what's true over there. I'm going to read to you something over here, and this is somebody talking about the Marines. Now, what are they? Men at all? The author here is saying, are Marines even human? Are soldiers even human is what he's saying. Visit the Navy Yard and behold a Marine, such a man as an American government can make, or such as it can make a man with its black arts, a mere shadow and reminiscence of humanity, a man laid out alive and standing. Let me explain now. I know it's sometimes hard to understand something like this on a radio show, so let me explain what this is saying. It's saying that if you go to the Naval Yard, you look at a Marine, you are seeing a shadow of a person that's been deformed by the evil arts of the government. This person is saying that this Marine is not even human. He's laid out alive and standing. In other words, he's saying that while he's walking, he's basically dead. He's a zombie. He's subhuman. He's lost most of his humanity. That's what this person is saying. He's not saying this. This is not written today. This is written a long time ago when people used to be much more polite, when they weren't dropping F-bombs every other second on Twitter. Now you might ask, well, what bit of weirdness, Arvin, what bit of weirdness did you dredge this out of? Where did you get this? I mean, what type of a person would write this? I mean, I've never seen something like this. I didn't say this in school. I've never seen this in college. When was this? What? Who is this person? I'll tell you, this was written in 1849. It was written by Henry David Thoreau. That's right, Thoreau. that guy who inspired Martin Luther King, who inspired Gandhi, one of the most influential political thinkers in history. This is one of his most famous works on civil disobedience, one of the most famous works on political theory ever written. That's what he says in it. Is it buried? No, it's in paragraph 3. Oh, sorry, paragraph 4, there's this one two-sentence paragraph. So let's say it's technically paragraph 4. It's not something well hidden. It's not something that's not influential. When people give you this information that you need to be invisible and nobody should ever know what you're saying, you have to be polite to everyone, they're lying to you because they don't want you to be effective. I've been speaking against government schools for years. By and large, no one's ever said anything about it. I could say whatever I wanted about government schools all day long. I would just say the rudest things I could think of. No effect. None at all. Until now. Now, what's different now? What's different right now? We have a Republican president. We've had Republican presidents before. What's different now is we have a Secretary of Education that people think wants to end government schools. I'm not sure that she does. But people think she does. Now they think that government schools might actually end. And all of a sudden, my message isn't something from a harmless eccentric anymore. It's something that might happen. It is today, it is now, that people like me and other people like me, now when we're closer than ever before in history to shutting down government schools, now is when they're saying that this message is impractical. It's not impractical. The homeschool movement is growing. The private school movement is growing. All these movements are growing. People have rejected government schools. The Secretary of Education is thought to, and I'm not sure it's true, is thought to be opposed to the very existence of government schools. It's never been more practical in human history. This is the most practical time in human history, in American history, to be opposed to government schools. And only now, are people saying that you shouldn't say stuff like that. Those people don't want you to be successful at changing culture. They don't want you to be successful at changing government. They want to go on living in their world where they're like, oh, I have no choice but to use government schools. You always have a choice. You always have a choice. They want to keep living in that world where it's considered good to use government schools. They don't want you to make them feel bad about their cognitive dissonance. Making somebody feel their cognitive dissonance is not an act of cruelty. It is an act of kindness. The people that I'm the most grateful to right now are the people who exposed me to my own cognitive dissonance. Not that long ago, I was basically a centrist. I wasn't a real libertarian. I was like, here's some things I like from the Democrats, and here's some things I like from the Republicans. That's what I would say. But people pushed me. They would ask questions like, I would talk about cutting taxes, and they'd say, well, how do you justify any taxes? And I didn't know how to answer that. And I thought they were being unfair to me, right? I thought, hey, I'm standing here talking about cutting taxes, and you're making me justify the existence of taxes. I didn't like that. It didn't make me feel good. You know why? Cognitive dissonance. Because a big part of me knew that all taxes were wrong. I was just too nervous to say it. It's because of those people that I got over that nervousness. If any of those folks are listening right now, you know who you are. The people who, when I first got into the LP, into the Libertarian Party, sat there and hammered me with every kind of impossible, rude question, forced me to consider every little thing, that would just hammer me, blindside me in every Q&A session. I thank you guys. Because that's where you start to overcome that dissonance and start to really think about what matters. All right, I want to take some questions. I want to take some questions that are coming in on social media. We'll start some now. We'll do some after this break. All right, let's see. What do we have coming in? All right, here's an interesting one. Christopher asks, what is the libertarian solution to the biased media crisis? That is a good question, isn't it? We have media that aren't covering libertarians. It's not a surprise. Status quo media wants to maintain the status quo. Why? Because the status quo made them the dominant media. If you are the dominant media in a particular culture, you probably don't want that culture to change too much. Realistically, if that culture changes too much, you might go from number one to number 5,000. I would assume that you wouldn't like that too much. So yeah, media often, dominant media tries to maintain dominant culture. That's not news to anybody. So what can we do about it? Well, the thing about media is they need to cover things that are interesting. That's a fact. They need to cover things that matter. And ask yourself this, have you said anything interesting? If you're running for office, have you said anything comprehensible? Did you talk about your 37-step plan to in 50 years legalize industrial hemp for certain purposes? No one cares, except for hemp farmers and theoretical ideological libertarians. Fine, yeah, I care. I think it's an important issue. But I recognize that hemp is not the center of a culture war right now. If we want to get covered by the media, we need to be instigating the culture war, not responding to someone else's. We need to be the forefront, not the responders. We need to create the debate, not beg to get into somebody else's debates. And how do you create a debate? You say something that gets pushback. You say something that someone opposes. If you're not being opposed, you're not having a debate. If you're not being opposed, you're not doing politics. If you're not being opposed, you're not saying anything that anyone is going to bother to oppose. I mean, you're kind of like the slow kid. No one's going to pick on you because you just seem so harmless. You want to get that media coverage. And I think that, and I do, I mean, obviously the Libertarian Party needs all the media coverage we can get. If libertarians want that media coverage, what do they need to do? They need to say something that is worthwhile for the media to cover. They need to do something that's worthwhile for the media to cover. And sometimes, yeah, that means doing what's happening. If there's some, you know, if there's some like law that's really minor, but everybody's discussing your area, of course, get involved in that law. That's common sense. But in the downtimes, don't just sit around. Attack any of the sacred cows of the state. Whatever your state is, government schools and military are probably big. Might be something else in your state. Attack that too. Maybe there's some big, huge government-run factory. Talk about getting rid of it. Get some opposition going. Create a debate. That's how you get covered. We're going to talk about some more of these questions right after this. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
I'm busy and so is my family. Leftover pizza and unhealthy takeout isn't really doing it for us anymore. Just ask my bathroom scale. That all changed when I found Freshly. For less than $10 a meal, Freshly delivers 6 meals a week, always fresh, never frozen, prepared by top chefs and nutritionists using the best, freshest, gluten-free ingredients. The best part is the menu is always new and fresh, just like the food, and it only takes 3 minutes for me to prepare breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and there's no messy cleanup and no dishes. My family loves the choices and the taste, and Freshly delivers to my home and my office, so I eat healthy all day, every day. If you're tired of the same old cardboard delivery and takeout, try out Freshly.com today and save $20 on your first order using coupon code VAH639 at Freshly.com. Your taste buds and your scale will thank you. So save $20 today with coupon code VAH639. 639 at Freshly.com.
Where are you getting your advice on buying, selling, or maintaining your most important asset, your home? Is it from a reality show on cable TV, a comparison website, or are you just flying by the seat of your pants and gut instinct? Stop now before you make another move. Tune into Real Real Estate Today with host and realtor Deb Tomorrow. You can't afford to play guesswork when it comes to your new or existing home. Listen every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Dane asks, what is the libertarian solution to poverty? Now, I believe that a lot of poverty is state created. I believe it's not accidental. I believe it's intentional. I believe, very frankly, that welfare, the welfare state, is designed to create dependency and intergenerational poverty. And my evidence for this, I have a few bits of evidence. One is that's what it's done, so there is, you know, that. But there's more to it than that. The first thing to realize is in the same areas where you see a lot of welfare, and it, I think welfare is especially designed to damage the minority communities, but welfare damages many communities, not just minority communities. But what do we see, especially in the area, in the inside of cities, what do we see happening? We see that welfare abounds and blockades are put up to alternatives. Welfare is everywhere, but when people want to do something other than welfare, that's real hard. It's really easy to do welfare. It's really hard to do anything else. Simple example, hair braiding and food trucks. Regulated, banned, made impossible unless you have all these degrees and all kinds of stuff. The skills that people have that could get them off of welfare are banned. You're not allowed to set up your own hair braiding business in many cities. You're allowed to get welfare. Don't worry. If you want welfare, they got all the welfare you want. You want to be dependent? Cool. They don't want you to be independent, though. You want to start your own hair braiding service? Can't do that, because then you might not be dependent on the state. Maybe you'll stop voting for statism. Maybe you'll stop voting for big government. They can't have that, so they're going to keep you dependent. Whatever they can do, they're going to keep you dependent. That's what they want to do. What about other more classic alternatives to welfare? I mean, some people are on welfare for physical reasons or very complex mental or emotional reasons. Sometimes not just purely economic. What do people try to do? They try to help the homeless. They try to help the poor. Why? Because that's what people do. That's a normal thing to do. But we can't have that going on. If people start helping each other, then people might stop voting for big government. So what have we seen in state, one state after the other? What are they doing? Banning charity. New York, people are setting out outdoor showers for the homeless. Banned. In New York, Jewish grandmothers for generations baking bagels, fresh bagels for the homeless. Banned. Hunters for the homeless. Got hunted deer, dressed the meat. They're experts, vacuum packed and all that kind of stuff, ready for the homeless. Banned. Destroyed by the state health department. Las Vegas, casinos, giving the food at the end of the night of the buffet, trying to donate that to the homeless. Banned. Why? Why banned it? Because if people are not dependent on big government, they won't vote for big government. I say remove all those bans. There should never be a ban on charity, and there should never be a ban on somebody who's somebody on welfare that wants to go off welfare. They say, I want to start a hair braiding service. I'm really good at braiding hair. I want to start a food truck. I'm real good at cooking. I want to help at my neighbor's food truck. I'm not that good at cooking, but I can work, and he's good at cooking. Banned, banned, banned. The welfare state generates people who vote for the welfare state. It's not that different from, you know, crony capitalism. If a particular company gets a benefit from a particular senator, they're probably going to vote for that senator, right? We all understand that. Well, the same thing with the welfare state. If you make people dependent on the welfare state, they're going to vote for the welfare state. That's why they fight so hard to prevent independence from the welfare state. People don't want to be on welfare. It's dehumanizing. It's embarrassing. That's why the welfare state does everything it can to keep people on that. So how do we address this? What is the libertarian solution to this? One, get rid of all these licensing restrictions. Every single one. Get rid of every single licensing restriction. If you want to start a food truck, go ahead, start it. If your food is bad, people won't come to it. You want to start a hair braiding service, start it. You want to start a makeup service, start it. You want to start a software engineering firm, start it. If your products are bad, you're probably going to go out of business. But if your products are good, you're going to become successful. All of that is better than being on welfare. You want to start a house cleaning service, start that. You want to start a house building service, do it. Start whatever you want. That is what gets people out of poverty. Getting rid of those blockades gets people out of poverty. Then you got to get rid of the things that keep people in poverty. You have to get rid of the welfare state. And not just the welfare state that applies to, you know, those poor people over there. You want to end welfare, you have to end middle class welfare. You want to end welfare, you must end welfare for the middle class. And that first and foremost includes government schools. You can't tell somebody who makes $0 a year right now that we have to end their welfare, but you get to keep your educational welfare because, you know, there's nothing more American than government schools or whatever. No, no, no. You want to end welfare, start with the biggest welfare program in the world, in the country, sorry. That $500 billion a year government school system. You want to end welfare, end that first. Or end it second, who cares, but end it. Work to end it. Work right now to start ending it. Show by example that you're ready to actually oppose all welfare. Don't be one of those people that says, listen, you shouldn't get any food stamps, but I need to have, you know, government schools and just random silly little extra classes paid for by my neighbors. Because, you know, I'm from the middle class and that's a better class. You're from the lower class. You don't go, well, no, none of that. Welfare is wrong. Educational welfare is just welfare. It's not some special, magical, special welfare just because, you know, there's, you know, the public school teachers unions get all, you know, sing songs and hand out apple ballots. That doesn't make any difference. So that's the libertarian solution to ending poverty. It's getting rid of the welfare mindset and getting rid of the blockades to people lifting themselves up. Gene asks about the Fed. What are we going to do about the Fed? Well, obviously we want to end it. We want to end the Fed because the Fed is misusing our money. It is draining the value of our money. And where is that value going? It's going towards government idiocy. War, the war on drugs, or something stupid, or when they can find something dumber, they find the dumbest thing they can find. But how can we end the Fed? Well, we're right now already kind of ending the Fed, right? Just as getting enough people into homeschool means that we're going to end government schools, getting enough people using cryptocurrency means that we'd be ending the Fed. If people just simply stop using dollars, then the Fed can print more or less dollars all day long. Wouldn't make any difference. Maybe you build a bookshelf. You sell that for some portion of a Bitcoin to someone who makes jackets. Use that portion of a Bitcoin to buy some food. That person uses that portion of a Bitcoin to buy some shoes. That shoemaker uses that portion of a Bitcoin to buy education. That person uses that portion of Bitcoin to buy software service. That next person... See what's happening over here? All these exchanges of labor are happening without a single dollar. And that means at each step, You're not funding war. You're not funding the war on drugs. You're not funding the state at all. You're ending the Fed just at a fundamental level through the things that libertarians like the most, individual competition. The free market is ending the Fed. It's not even a policy change. The policy is no different. Treasury can keep printing money and handing it to the Fed, and they can keep on spending it on nonsense, but it won't matter because we can just stop using it. If we switch over to other currencies, or we don't like cryptocurrencies, use gold. Use something else. If you use something other than Federal Reserve notes, if you use something other than Treasury notes, then the government's not really getting its cut. You're just trading labor for labor. We're all benefiting, and none of it's going to the government. None of it's going to war. None of it's going to the war on drugs. None of it's going to not lock nonviolent people in rape cages. None of it's going to do any damage. None of it. All of it is you being used for you to exchange good and useful labor for somebody else's good and useful labor. That's what happens. Let's do one more question before the break. Mark asks, what is the libertarian solution to achieving a libertarian society in our lifetime? You have to fight the big cultural fights. That's what it is. If you say government schools and military are so popular that I can't say anything about them because it's scary, then we're going to be living in the same statism forever. You have to be willing to go after the sacred cows of the enemy. First and foremost, you have to be willing to go after the sacred cows of the enemy. Make them defend whatever they hold most dear. Let other people who already agree with you, give them the courage to speak. You guys have noticed that people say a lot more against the military and government schools now than they used to, right? Why? Because I know that that at least one person will be there fighting with them, fighting on their side. It's scary to be the only one. It's not scary to ask scary to be one of two. It's not as scary to be one of 50. If we all get out there and we all use our voices to go after the sacred cows of the state, all the other people who believe what we believe, tens of millions of other people who already believe this. Let me put it this way. Every person who doesn't use a government school probably thinks it's a bad idea. Every person who doesn't join the military probably thinks it's a bad idea. They've just learned to be quiet about it because they don't want the social blowback. Those people are our natural allies. Don't worry about doing outreach to teachers' unions and to the military welfare complex. Fight them so that their opponents will see that you're there. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Be the enemy of their enemy. Become their friends. Become their allies. And that's how we're going to get this to change. Don't pretend, don't kid yourself for a second that there's some nice and polite, harmless way to do this. There isn't. You want to have this political war, let's have it. But it's going to be a full-scale cultural war. It's not going to be won by just being the most politest person ever. It's not going to work. It's not going to be won by ignoring the issues that matter the most. You want to get involved in some of this, go to lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
We live in perilous times on a beautiful, yet fragile planet. As a species, we are not doomed to self-destruct. We can live in peace and in love for one another. We can save this, our only home. We must mature. Open your mind. Soften your heart. Listen for The Fate of Humanity. Crucial Conversations for Our Survival with host Lauren N. Nile. Tune in. The Fate of Humanity airs Wednesdays at 6 a.m. Pacific Time and 9 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I want to talk a little bit about fallibility. You know, often very critical about the military. I strongly advise people to not join this military at this time because I view it as basically entirely wrong. I didn't join the military. Thought about it. Most young men think about it. I mean, what's more badass than being in the special forces, CIA or something like that? And I didn't. And it's not for any particularly great or noble reason. I just, you know, didn't. But that doesn't mean that in those days I was immune to massive cultural propaganda. Like most people, like most 17, 18-year-old kids, I was very vulnerable to propaganda. Like people who joined the military seeking respect, I went to college because I wanted to have advantages, right? I wanted to have an education that gave me advantages. I wanted to have an advantage over other people. I wanted to be ahead. I wanted these secret weapons. That's what I wanted. That's what I thought I was going to get in college. Many years later today, you'll see me often talking about not going to college. People say, well, didn't you go to college? I'm saying, well, I'll say, yes, I did go to college. It's not a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea for anybody. The first lesson that I learned in college is the classic lesson of communism, which is from each according to his abilities, to each according to his needs. That's communism in a nutshell. And where did I learn this? Not in a class on communist theory. No, I learned that before I got there through this concept of financial aid, which at the time I thought was normal. I thought it was just how you do things. Nothing wrong with it. Today, about 60 to 70% of students get some kind of financial aid. And that doesn't make any sense because 60 to 70% of incoming college students do not live below the poverty level. 60 to 70% of college students didn't grow up on the streets. 60 to 70% of Harvard students didn't spend all their eat their meals in a food kitchen. These are just normal folks with normal lives. And yet, the vast majority need financial aid, which means it's not financial aid at all. It's just a trick. It's a trick to decide how much they're going to charge you after, only after they've seen your tax returns and bank accounts. That's what it is. It's a trick to decide how much they're going to charge everybody after they've seen their tax returns and bank accounts. We call that price discrimination in economics. There's less nice words for it, but yeah, that's about as nice as it's going to get from me anyway. The anti-capitalism, the anti-free market mindset of college continues far past just that. In many of the classes, you got this sense that instead of the information being presented in a way to give you an advantage, you the student, it's more that you are being trained to give service to this, you know, collective study. That's not very surprising. Most of the Ivy League has its roots in you know, religious type monastery schools, and in a religious school, you're always serving a higher power. So it's not surprising that they have this mindset. It's just not what anyone who's there wants. People go to Ivy League schools because they want an advantage, not so that they can engage in service to something else. It doesn't make any sense. It didn't stop there. If you know, later on, as I learned, I didn't know this at the time, but later on, I learned that the main reason that college tuition is so high is not so that you're not paying for education. I mean, education is mostly not very good anyway. You end up basically doing independent studies. Those the professors have no interest or skill in teaching. They're there to research. That's where your money's going. It's going to fund their random research, the research of professors, the research of grad students. You want to be paying for an education for yourself, but instead you're paying 10 times the cost to subsidize somebody else's hobby. It's a good hobby, sure, but that's not what you wanted. You wanted an advantage for you, and you're not getting an advantage for you. Often the classes were aggressively, deliberately anti-free market. I remember shopping one class, it was about advertising. The first thing the teacher told us, in this class, you're not going to learn how to do advertising. To me, I asked, well, what's the point? What's the point of an advertising class that doesn't teach you advertising? But that's the mindset. That's not an uncommon thing. Most people who are in academia would say, yeah, of course, you would learn how to do advertising in academia. You would learn how to think about the process of other people doing advertising. That's what college is. It's academia. It's preparation for academia. It's not what you want it to be. It's not advantages for you. I got tricked, but you don't have to. You don't have to be duped by that. If you want personal advantages, here's what I recommend. First, use tools, use the library, use Project Gutenberg, use all that to learn more things. If you want to get the culture experience, just go hang out at any college. The campuses are wide open. Talk to anyone you want to. If you want to get a different experience, get involved in politics and business, networking, etc. If you want to prove your ability, and that's a big part. People want to say, well, I need a degree to prove my ability. Guess what? In almost every area, there are tests that you can take to prove your ability. You have the actuarial exams. Let's say you're in love with the government. You want to take a government thing? Fine. Take the FSOT, the Foreign Service Officer's Test. It's a test of humanities and whatnot. That's very highly respected, much more highly respected than a degree. There are so many other ways to prove your ability. But if you want to really learn, I'll tell you where I've learned the most, by far. It hasn't even been put from books or any of that kind of stuff. By far, I've learned the most from entrepreneurship. You learn more from entrepreneurship than you will from anything. And today, it's easier to kind of get your feet wet than it's ever been before. You got Fiverr.com. You got 99 Designs. You got Kickstarter. You have so many different ways. Craigslist. You can start a small business right now. Yeah, you're not going to make any money at first, probably, but you're going to start to learn. You're going to learn what innovation is actually like. You're going to learn what customer service is like. You're going to have ideas. You're going to discuss things with other entrepreneurs. It is exciting. It is glorious. It is actually what you wanted college to be, that college isn't. That's entrepreneurship. I get why you want to go to college, but what you're looking for isn't there. It is outside of there. So here's what I ask. I'm going to ask you the same thing that the founder of PayPal, Stanford graduate, is asking. Take a couple of years off, not to just backpack around Europe. Take a couple of years off to see what you can do without college. See what you can do as an entrepreneur without college. Really give it a shot. See what you can do by learning online or learning offline or learning in various ways, debating ideas. See what you can do without having a huge mountain of debt or wasting your family's wealth on something. See what you can do. My guess is going to be a lot more than you think. And if it's not, if you really need to have a degree for whatever reason, college isn't going anywhere. Go a couple of years later. It's the big deal. Go as an adult. Go as somebody that's really thought about things. There are so many ways that we can avoid getting taken advantage of, but the first thing is you need to speak out. I've spoken out about my experiences. Those of you who have been duped by the state in other ways, please speak out about yours. If we speak, if we use our voices to help other people not make the same mistakes, it's the best way to improve the lives of others. It's the best way to really make a difference. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvin Vora again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.